This is Phil Ferens. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I believe it is episode 615. 615. I had to look at the notes. That's about all I can see on the notes because it's dark. We had a little thing at the church tonight, so I ran in to set up video, and then after I set up video, I swung over and we had the little thing at the church, and now I have brought my mother-in-law's car back to her place because she's still staying with us, and I am driving home. This is about 15 minutes to get home, so I'm just gonna babble until we get home, and then I've got a few notes that I can look at to see see what we're actually talking about. I have just a fun little topic I came across. It makes me laugh. Fashion. It's about fashion. One of the interesting things about fashion is that it has not been what it is now. And those kinds of things fascinate me because there were times in the past, as in Victorian England, during the Renaissance period, other periods, where men actually did just as much decorating as women did. And for instance, one of the things was that that was very fashionable and was very in was a well-shaped calf on a man. And in fact, part of the original appeal of high heels, which started in Mongolia, they were fashioned so that the horsemen, their feet would stick in the stirrups better because it had a heel on it that could catch the stirrup. That fashion came over to Europe, and part of what that fashion did was that when men wore block high heels, not stilettos, block high heels, it would lift their calf muscle and define it more. And so I am told, I would need to confirm this and look it up, but I am told that there was a market during those times for calf inserts. calf forms that men would insert into their hosiery if they did not have well enough formed calves, because this was considered a very masculine trait to have a well-formed calf. And so men who were lacking in that department would buy inserts. So, and of course there was, you know, all the frills and pomp and the lace and the silk and wigs and everything else that in this day and age we would only identify with the feminine. In that day and age, it was also identified with the masculine. And there was a component of male appearance that was just important, as important to the females as female appearance was to the males. And to other females. Figure out what the competition is. So, and that, of course, went both ways. So that kind of thing is very interesting to me. It's very interesting to me how things drift, how we adopt different cultural conventions when in fact they don't really mean anything. We just adopt them. My windshield is a little froggy, so I'm going to put up a little more air up there to kind of see a little better. I'm also told, I have not looked this up, but I'm also told, and I saw it in some anecdotal articles, that, for instance, our assignation of pink to girls and blue to boys was not rigid either. That at the beginning of the 20th century, pink, especially the bold pinks, were considered a very masculine color, whereas the light pale blues were considered very feminine. One article that I was reading actually traced the origin of that swap to Hitler. That when Hitler decided that he would make the homosexuals wear something I forget what the symbol was, but the color of the symbol was pink. And some feel that I have read, some feel that that was a beginning of a shift away from pink being a very strong color and belonging to boys. So, there you go. At the end of the day, it is all just thread, and it's all just cloth, and it's all just color, and it does not inherently have a gender associated with it. It is what we culturally associate with those things. And of course, part of the reason that women laugh when I dress in certain costumes with certain cuts and certain styles and certain colors is because inherently women are dealing with the complexities of their gender in terms of what their reproductive systems are producing and the cycling that they're going through. And none of it is inherently prissy. They are, in fact, enduring the trials and tribulations of their bodies constantly cycling to prepare and then unprepare for pregnancies. And the outward appearance is something they just put on. And so, personally, I think that when they see a guy do that, who is not trying to impress, who is not trying to run competition for them, who is just doing it because he thinks it's funny, they find that funny. Especially when they know me. And they know I'm just doing it to make them smile. And especially when I have little stories to go along with it. And you know, we just have a laugh and we go on. One of the lovely little things that happened, and I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast, lovely little things. I think it was for Halloween. I had the unicorn outfit and some of the waitresses at the servers, sorry, old terminology, the servers at Gailey's had dressed up too. And so we took this group picture with some other friends who had dressed up. And someone, I have one of my waitress server friends there had posted the picture, and someone had made a comment about the unicorn suit. And my friend there, she said, I know, something to the effect, I just love him so much because he always comes in and he's got a story and he's always cheery and, you know, he's kind. And I just, you know, I wrote her back and I said, I love you too. And I said, I always enjoy seeing you. And it was interesting because the next week it was a little edge on it, but it was just, we started talking and it was just like instantaneous. She knew I wasn't using it in any sort of romantic way. I am old enough to be her grandfather, so, you know, that's not going to happen. But it's just lovely to be able to share people's lives and to be able to engage with them, to be able to bring a little joy, bring a few smiles, and move forward. So that's fun. Tomorrow is National Argyle Day. Last week was New Year's, of course, and so I dressed up in a costume that was the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters. That went over well. I told people, you know, either this next year, given the way 2020 was, either this next year is going to be sweetness and light every single day, like eating a complete diet of marshmallows, or the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters is going to show up and it'll be the end of the world. So they all laughed and we carried on. So it was good. It was good. I'm trying to resurrect my juggling skills for tomorrow because it is Argyle Day, and of course Argyle, that diamond pattern, is traditionally, the plain diamond pattern is traditionally associated with court jesters. So I have an outfit, and I'm gonna practice some more tonight, and we're gonna give this a try. So all is well there. All is well with the writing. I'm into chapter 18. It is 10 till 8. I should already be writing at this point, but by the time I get home and get the podcast uploaded, we'll see if I get my 500 words in tonight. I may have to make that up tomorrow, which is fine, because, you know, we've got Fridays and Saturday, and I can probably get caught up. we are in the midst of a small challenge with cash receipts. Cash receipts really, really wanted to be closed tomorrow. And as of Tuesday, there were still plus 300 batches to do, and they do about 100 batches a day normally. They really, really wanted to be done by Friday so that the mission systems could finish up and they could get money to the missionaries, blah, blah, blah. So they did do 149 batches on Wednesday, which was very good. And then they were working today. I was checking in on it around 2 or 3 o'clock. And they were at just over 100. They were at like 110. And they still had like 200 to go. But when I checked in and saw what cleared through cycle, they had done 160 batches today. So they are cranking. So if I've got my calculations right, they're at about 150-ish batches to go, unless they've added more. So they are within striking distance. I mean, 150 batches is a big, big day for them, but they've really been pushing. And they're good people at the business I work at and consult with. They're just good people, you know? Very dedicated. So it's a privilege. It's just a privilege to work with them. So that's all well. Writing is good. Work is good. Let's see what else. Family is good. We've had a good week. I am working. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Jesus and I were having a conversation about backwards day. I am moving forward with that. This is actually a little, there's some engineering involved in this one. It is in, let's see, it's in 3 weeks. Tomorrow is Argyle Day. The next week is Rubber Ducky Day. The next week is Polka Dot Day. And then it's Backwards Day. It's the last Friday in January. Backwards Day is actually the 31st of January, but I'll be previewing it on that last Friday. So it's fun. It's fun. I hopefully will get one more piece of it done tonight and then just keep moving forward through the weekend with the writing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see. We'll see. This is kind of a challenge. But I am, as I've said before, dangerously close to lapping myself. In fact, I think that it's mid-February that I lap myself. I think. I'll have to look that up. Because I know I'm set for Valentine's Day. And then the week after that is Random Acts of Kindness week. So I've got that. And that's February. And then we get into March. Oh, and March, first week of March is Wear Blue Day. First week of February is Wear Red Day. And I've got ideas for that, so I don't have... And then, like, the second week is St. Patrick's Day. And then we get into the third week, and then we're into Easter. And I've got that covered. And then I think the next week is something like Ellis Island Family History, and I've got that covered. So I'm dangerously close. I will probably still make some costumes. I did check on my paper bag costume that I had made. I checked on my paper bag costume, and I had stored it in the utility room in some netting that was taped up to the ceiling, but I already saw there were some dead bugs up in it, so I don't know if some critters have made a home in it, because it's all just paper and tissue paper, you know, but it's not that hard to reproduce, so there's metal pieces in there to keep the whole thing stable, but, you know, there's just like a Japanese lantern, which is just tissue paper, and it's like 48 inches or 24 or something, I don't know. And a bunch of paper bags, sack lunch bags, and then a bunch of tissue paper. So there's really, really not that much to it. So if I have to reproduce it, I can. I know what I'm doing now. It's just a matter of slamming it together. So it'll just be fun. It'll be fun to see how that all works out. But aside from that, like, you know, I've got Cupid already for Valentine's Day. And all those things are together. And, you know, we're getting close. We're getting close to being a coasty. So all is well. All is well. So I'm pulling into my driveway, and then we'll get some notes out here in just a second. I have been, a couple of little things. I have been listening to a lot of near-death experience stories. And it's very interesting to hear about the things they have in common, and that it's very interesting to hear about the things they have different. And I will tell you that there are things that are different that don't immediately fit into my understanding of God's working in the world, but they aren't necessarily things that would be completely foreign to that, especially if you recognize that God has reconciled the world to himself, that he no longer counts men's sins against them, and that he is deeply, deeply in love with the human race. You know, if you factor those things in, and then you realize that people are wonderfully diverse, and they have many, many things in their background that would teach them about what life is. And if we recognize that even in Scripture we see, one moment, I have stuff I'm pulling out. But even in Scripture we see that God is willing to accommodate. He's willing to become what he needs to become to reach people. And by that, saying that we see that in Scripture, there is, for instance, the bubbles in the pool, the pool of Siloam, where Jesus meets a man who's lame from birth, and he asks him if he wants to be healed. And the man said that he does, but he doesn't have anyone to put him in the pool when the waters are stirred. And what we see from that is apparently God was willing to send an angel down to stir the waters so that people would have an identification of faith, and in the process of that could find their healing. And I've mentioned before, you know, that you could just find so many ways that could go bad, of people taking little vials of water and then shaking it and saying, see, if you just buy this is water from the pool of Siloam, and if you just shake this, you can experience the moving of God in your life. You know, there's so many ways that could go bad. And yet God is willing to do that because you're in the intertestamental period, where the presence of God is scarce. And he's willing to do that, I think, because he's trying to keep the idea of the supernatural alive. And, you know, that's a marvelous thing about our God, that he is willing to meet us where we are. So, fun stuff. So, near-death experiences. Very interesting. Anyways, well, let's just do this real quick, because this is funny to me. Okay, so I came across this article called Why Were Medieval Europeans So Obsessed with Long Pointy Shoes? So in 1463, London outlawed the shoes of the fanciest men. These dapper lords had grown ridiculous in their dapperness and had taken to ambling streets shod in long carrot-shaped shoes that tapered to impish tips, some as long as 5 inches beyond the toe. These shoes were called Krakows or Polanes. And the court of King Edward IV eventually found them offensive enough to pass a sumptuary law prohibiting shoe tips that extended over 2 inches beyond the toe. Anyway, so this goes through all the history of it and how they were, but it's really interesting because they talk about the fact that they had to be stuffed to make them stand up because you wanted them to stand up and be stiff. You didn't want them to be limp and flop around. So there is a shoe historian, senior curator, Jackie Kelly, I think is the name, senior curator at Museum of London, which boasts one of the most impressive collections of these types of shoe. So Kelly says, quote, "It's a time when tunics are getting shorter and young men would have been showing off their legs. So low-cut shoes would have accentuated and elongated the leg all the way down to that long point." So this is the time when, in essence, men are wearing mini skirts and long pointy shoes. So it's fine. It's fun. So Polanes stand out even more because medieval fashion was often governed by a clean lines and a practical chase minimalism, Shawcross says, another person. Polanes also marked a rare period in history when men's fashion outshone women's in terms of sheer frill, according to Kelly. So that's what I was talking about before. So some people think it was because people had just gotten out of the plague and they were celebrating being alive. And so these types of shoes really just, were a kind of retail therapy because people found themselves with more money and less friends. 25 million people had disappeared. So eventually, though, according to this article, the English crown felt the need to intervene, in part because of the lascivious connotations of the increasingly extended toe tips. Quote, "People thought the longer the toe, the more masculine the wearer," Shawcross says. "But some people weren't keen on that connotation." Because here we have, someone interprets something a certain way and then everybody starts seeing it that way. And then if you have this long toe tip, some people are thinking it refers to some kind of anatomical organ and you don't want it to be limp, et cetera, et cetera. Parliament equated wearing the shoes to public indecency and stepped forward to put limits on a variety of racy fashions. Quote, "No person under the estate of the Lord, including knights, esquires, and gentlemen, are allowed to wear any gown, jacket, or coat which does not cover the genitals and buttocks." I guess we wouldn't be wearing leggings in this day and age. Also not to wear any shoes or boots with spikes longer than 2 inches. No tailor to make such a short garment or a stuffed doublet, and no shoemaker to make such pikes, the 1463 law reads. The only other city known to have taken a stand against the shoes was Paris, which banned them in 1368. They banned them almost 100 years, 95 years before. It was a fashion, and fashions come and go. By 1975, it had vanished, Shawcross says. And under the reign of King Henry VIII, European footwear made a hard pivot into wide box toes. In response, England later passed sumptuary laws restricting the width of these boxy shoes. Quote, "The king had men who would go around trying to catch people measuring the width of their toes." Yeah. So surprisingly enough, in the 1950s, there was a surprise reprise of the pointy shoes, and the Natalie named Winkle Picker. And you can still buy Winkle Pickers today. If you just look up Winkle Picker. Oh, it's so fun. It's just so fun. What we all agree means something. And then there are people like me who come along and say, you know, I don't think it really means that. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.